So this is how you do a podcast. What you do is you get in the studio, you have your friend come from men's group, drive all the way down from Rancho Cucamonga, and then you think you're on a podcast with somebody else. You're going to be interviewing someone else, and you say, like, why don't you hang out with me for a little bit, and then we'll go to lunch afterwards or breakfast afterwards. And the podcast rescheduled, which was a blessing, and I said, well, why don't we just sit down and record right now? And my buddy Justin Latfi was like, well, why don't we just go to breakfast? Well, if we could podcast, let's podcast. This is honestly, for me, it fills my heart to be able to have a friend like this. You guys saw him, never outworked. He just dropped his book. It's the bestseller now, but we're probably not going to talk about it at all because we're going to talk about some random stuff. And that's why you should always stay ready. Let's get this party started.
We put the work in. We ain't stopped just because it's hurting right before your eyes. So it's coming to no surprise. The takeover is televised. Over and over and over again. Make no mistake, we continue to win. Defeat never known, cause I will not lose. They wanna mimic my moves, but can't walk in my shoes.
This is where you should make sure that every single thing works. But please welcome to the show, Mr. Justin. Don't call me Laufty Latfi.
You got it right. The T comes before the F.
Why does the T come before the F, man?
Ask the ancient Egyptians. I don't know.
I had no idea. What's the most random Egyptian tradition that you had to go by in your family? Was there any? Did you guys have some tradition in it?
So I said my family came over in the 70s from Egypt. So
okay.
My grandparents and my dad both came over.
Did they have some strict, like, old school Egyptian stuff?
So for him, there was. And, like, I'll put it frankly, like, he couldn't date a white woman. Like, if you brought home a white woman or just someone who is not Arab, it was very no-no. So when he first started dating my mother, who is not Arab, like, she's half Thai, half white, she had to, like, wait in the car sometimes. If he would go inside to grab something, you know, because it was very, like, very taboo to date somebody outside of the Arab race.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so the whole thing today, I've named the episode Stay Ready because we have been doing some what I call production up in the place getting ready. And talk to me about the staying ready as opposed to having to get ready, because there's so many opportunities that come around that sometimes if you're not ready, you don't get it, and then you get mad.
100%. Now, so a perfect example, we just came out of Secret Knock, and every day, somebody knew at least twice a day, like, hey, are you going to go speak? I said, I don't know, but I'm staying ready. Like, if I get called, if Kelly or James says, hey, come up, it's time for you to speak, I'm ready for that. And so I prepared every day. If that were going to happen, you know, I wanted to be ready
for it. Did it happen?
It didn't.
It did not. But you were ready.
But I was ready, because I know that when I have friends like you two, I just have to be ready for whatever is going to come, which showed today. I drove down for men's group, and my only intention was to be here for men's group. But I packed a bag. I said, you know what? I'm going to bring a change of clothes. I'm going to bring my running gear. I'm going to bring a suit jacket. I don't know what's going to happen.
Hold on. You brought running shoes.
I did.
And a suit jacket, and then journals, just in case you were right, because you said that you had some journals, too.
Right. I brought my journals because I love going on the water and just being quiet, you know.
Okay.
So I wanted to be ready for anything that could happen, knowing that I was driving, because it's about an hour and a half from my house, all the way down here.
So you came down this morning. This was the thing that I spoke life to you today, because I was saying, like, I mean, you drove an hour and a half to be in men's group, right?
Yep.
So tell me about, like, why would men's group, because some guys out there don't even know what a men's group is. I didn't know until just recently, a couple years ago, but it has really altered my life.
For me, it was simple. I was in this place a couple weeks ago that I felt like I was failing in everything, which I was telling you earlier. I felt like I was failing in business because my businesses weren't performing where I wanted them to be by the first quarter. You know, I felt like I was failing in triathlon because I wasn't running enough, swimming enough, biking enough. You know, and because I was so distracted by these other things, I wasn't present with my wife and my kids because I was stressed about everything else. And I had to stop myself and really just silence those thoughts. And I literally laid down on the ground in my living room. I put on my headphones, and I just quieted those thoughts. I said, okay, what do I need to do from here? And I really stopped and listened. And the two things that stood out to me was, well, you need to spend more time in the Word, not getting in the Bible every day like I should. You should go to men's group, and then you should train harder in the gym. And those kind of things I've kept constant because the rest will follow.
How much of this, like, that's a pretty disciplined approach, right, to assess? Because a lot of times we have a bad day and we're just like, we're just having a bad day. How much of this comes from your special forces background? I don't think it's talked about enough with you as far as the special forces part, because you're just such a chill dude. Like, I believe that that's why God didn't allow me in special forces, because I would wear a shirt that said I'm in special forces, or I was in special forces. And I'd wear a cape and I'd baby oil myself up and I'd have a fan in front of me and the fan would constantly be flapping in the wind and people would be like, why are you oiled up and have a cape on? And I'd be like, that's simple. Cause I was awesome. In this set special forces. Do you think that it has to do with that? I mean, did that type of training help that type of mentality as you move forward?
I don't know. I think, you know, in that kind of environment, you're always humbled because you're always going to be around somebody who's done really amazing things in the military. You know, I've worked with guys who have 2 Silver Stars, who spent every single deployment to the Middle East that you possibly could, has been on every single movement. So I've done a lot of cool things in comparison to a lot of people in the military. There are a lot of people that I was around that made me seem very not cool. You know? So you're always humbled. And I heard a quote recently I really loved. It says, your ability to grow is directly proportional to how much you're willing to look at yourself and not run away. And I was in that moment. I was in that moment where I just really needed to look at myself and be able to say, okay, you're not doing these two fundamental things that you know are the foundation of your day. Like, you got to spend time with the Word. You got to push yourself in the gym. And I wasn't. I wasn't doing that enough.
How do you keep yourself from believing the hype? And when I say this, like, sometimes stories about an individual kind of gets hyped a little bit, right? So they'll be like, you'll make $15. And then someone will tell the story and be like, he made $16.50. And you don't want to tell.
You don't want to cut it down.
You don't want to be like, no, it was $15, bro. And then it's like, the next story is, this dude brought in $18. And before you know it, it's 20, it's 25. And it almost has a life of its own. How do you not believe the hype?
Yeah. I don't know, you have to humble yourself because the perfect example, we did this real estate deal last year, which netted me $270,000.
Okay.
Like, almost exactly. And which is a huge number. And that's more money than I had ever made in my life before.
Uh-huh.
But over time, that number became 300,000, 600,000. I even heard once it was 800,000. Like, that number kept growing to me. But to me, it was like this one thing that happened. You know, it opened a ton of doors, but it happened once. You know, so it's not something that I just kind of rest my hat on.
Yeah. What does it take to do that? Because I think a lot of times people will say, like, the 270, right? They'll be like, wow, you netted 270. But they don't take into account all the money or all the energy that it took to be able to produce the 270. And that's why a lot of times when I hear a number, I always think, like, okay, well, how long did it take? I remember my pop saying this, and I love my pops, like, more than anything. But I remember my pops pulled me aside. He's like, boy, you know how much I made this year? This was a long time ago. And he was like, $350,000. And I was like, Pop, that's amazing. But I know you hadn't been working for the last 4 years, though. So 1 year you made $350,000. You stayed off for 4 years. So you made $70,000 a year, Pop. Like, it came. And so tell that with the 270, what did it take to make the 270?
That was a continual process. So that was like a before, during, and after process. You know? The thing, the story that everyone gets focused in on is I made 124 offers on different homes and trying to find a good real estate deal, like good investment deal, you know, which we went through. But then for a month or 2 months, just getting to closing, like, I was up at 4 a.m. talking to people in Florida, trying to coordinate and make sure everything went smoothly for about a month. And then for 2 months after that, like, I was making sure that everything finished the way that we said it was going to finish. You know, some took me flying to Florida to make things happen. You know, my wife and kids, we all went out there to make sure all the homes got decorated the way they needed to. So this was a an entire process from probably April into July of, you know, before, during, and after to make that happen, of just making sure what I said would happen was going to happen.
And so when you look at it, like, if you said hard money into that, how much did you invest into your time, you know, the money, everything like that, to be able to make the 270?
I probably took about 40 grand of the 270 and put it back into the homes to make sure that everything we said would happen did.
Okay. And then what about finding the deal in the first place? Was there ads that you had to run? Was there things like that that you did?
No, that was just time. So I was really meticulous about my time. I was working full time. And so I would wake up at 4, work out till 5:30, get ready, get to the office an hour early. So from 6 to 7, I could do real estate stuff. And then everyone would show up at 7. Everyone would break for lunch at noon and usually go out somewhere. So from noon to 1, I would do real estate stuff again. And then if I finished all of my operations work at like 3, I could look at it again if I had time. But if not, then at 8 after my girls went down, from 8 to 9, I'd be looking for houses again on my phone. And so I was just very meticulous about the hours that I spent.
What did it teach you about when you hear a person do a deal, right? And you hear a figure or you hear a number, because you've been through this now and you know the back end part of it, and you know that sometimes it starts out at $15, it ends up at $16.50. Before we know it, it's $18. And then it's like, this dude made $1 million. What lens do you look at those kind of results as, and how would you caution a young entrepreneur looking at just the results as opposed to the process?
Well, if I have somebody in front of me who did just do a deal, I just celebrate it, you know, because I know you put work into that people didn't see, you know, so I just celebrate that because it's a big accomplishment. My little brother, he just got his first deal, and all I've done is hype him up and like how proud I am of him, because I am, and he's put some work in to make that happen. But for people kind of going into this, and any sales gig is really the same, you have to understand you're going to reach so many no's. There's going to be so many times you're going to question yourself, like, is this really worth it? Is this going to work? But understand, you probably just haven't gotten enough no's yet. You haven't worked enough. Like, you haven't put in enough hours for this really to make happen.
Well, when we talk about the hours, I was just talking about to a lady the other day, and she asked me what I did. I then flipped it and said, what do you do? And I had some fun with that. She said that she had done, was doing podcasting and things like that. And then her friend was like, oh, wow, you know, how often do you do it? And she said, I've been working hard. I've been, doing for the last 2 years, I've done 77 episodes. And I said, wow, that's amazing. It really is. Like, if you look at that in 2 years, 35 episodes, it's rarely missing a week. Yep. You know, it's missing 17 weeks in a year, but you're talking about vacation, family, all that stuff. So that's a lot of work, right? Then the lady who was asking the questions asked me, and I didn't want to answer because I knew where it was going to go, but we started to talk, and I told her some of the stats, some of the things that we were doing. And she said, why? Because my volume was high. And what I said was, for me, it's just a simple math equation, right? So if I do one, or if I do five and you do one, within a year, I've worked 5 years, you've worked 1 year. By year two, I've worked 10 years, you've worked 2 years. By year three, we don't even want to continue to do the math because it's not on the same stratosphere. How important is getting in the reps when you're talking about the, you know, there, when, or better question would be, when does it go from a bumper sticker? You got to give seven no's to, or get seven no's to everyone yes. You know, if you think it, you can be it. When does it go from a bumper sticker to reality, and how much does reps have to do with that process?
I just tell people it depends on how much rejection you're willing to take to accomplish whatever it is you're doing. You know, so you're a big Oilers fan, and I know the answer to this. How many times did you reach out to Eddie George before he came on your podcast?
3.5 years.
Yeah. So for 3.5 years, that was worth it for you because that was something you wanted to make happen. Most people don't look at that process just like they, like you said. They look at, wow, Kelly's got Eddie George on the podcast. That's amazing. They must have met somewhere. No, you spent 3.5 years reaching out to this man and getting ignored until he said yes. Like, let's do that.
And when we talk about the reps, like for me, again, it's just a math equation, right? So when I was in the professional beauty industry, a normal hairdresser would do anywhere from 3 to 4. If they were busy, they would do 5 guests in a day. For me, I would do 17 to 25. So in that, by the time I got done with one day, I had a week's worth of experience for them. Yeah?
Yep.
And then there was most of the time I would be traveling on my weekends. So my weekends, we would do, you know, 50 to 60 models in the 2 days. So that'd be another 25 a day. So now I'm doing 7 days a week almost that I'm doing 25, where most people are doing 25 in 1 week and then taking 2 days off. And so the acceleration rate was so high. I looked at this with my pops when he did a thing called sleep teaching, which I would suggest that everyone do, although you'll just be mad at yourself for it. But he literally put personal development tapes in our pillows and had an auto reverse Walkman and had us listen to 8 to 10 hours of personal development every day for 2 years. If you do the math on this, Justin, I don't know if you've ever done the math.
I'm not good at math.
Okay. 10 hours a day, 7 days a week, 70 hours. 70 hours, 50 weeks in a year. Okay. It's 3,500 hours. By the time I was in sixth grade, I had 7,000 hours of personal development.
Which is more than most people do in their entire lifetime.
Okay. And if you do the math on this, if you do 1 hour a day, which would be a lot, if you did 1 hour a day and you did that 7 days a week, it'd be 7 times 50 would be 350. It would take you 20 years of 1 hour a day to be able to get to that point. So I look at you, and the reason why I say it is because I look at you and you're a reps guy. Like, you're in. Like, you actually do the stuff that you're talking about. How did you learn that?
Stubbornness. I don't know. It probably came from when I was a door-to-door salesman. You know, I got kicked out of college when I was 18, and I had to go find a job. And there's not a lot of places that are willing to hire you when you are kicked out of college and arrested. Like, that doesn't make for a great intro conversation. But I got a job as a door-to-door salesman, and at first I was really bad, you know, because I was very awkward coming up to your door. I know you didn't want me to be there, and I couldn't sell anything, you know. But I realized very quickly that I was younger than most of the people in the office, and I could move faster. So I would hustle between all the doors. And then when everybody would break for lunch, I would just keep going. And so I would hit more doors than you did in a day, in a week, until I became one of the top salespeople, simply because I was getting more reps. I was getting better at it faster than you because I was willing to move faster to make that happen.
What about the perfection part, right? So a lot of times people will wait until the situation is perfect. And what I said is stay ready. Were you ready for this podcast today?
No. I came knowing something could happen. And so I was like prepared.
Uh-huh.
But you said go out to breakfast. I said, okay, cool. Let's go out to breakfast.
What about the perfection part? Because a lot of people say, like, I'll do it when everything's in line. Like our buddy. I love me some buddy. And I toyed with him. And I don't know, on third day of Secret Knock, which we're going to talk about here in a second. Third day of Secret Knock, I said, like, honestly, like, he texted me before before the show, and I didn't answer him on purpose because he wanted to make sure that, like, let me rehearse. And I was like, it ain't that type of party, man. You know what I mean? So what about the person that needs it to be kind of perfect? And when I say that, I give Buddy a hard time. He's an incredible human being. And I toy with him a little bit. And I think sometimes people that put in a lot of reps, people will look at you and be like, oh, wow, well, you just do it naturally. I know it ain't natural, right?
So that is actually something that I learned in the military. So my job in the military was kind of that that panic button. If everything's going wrong, you need to turn to somebody and say, hey, help us get out of this situation. You know, so what I would do is I would look at everything in the surrounding area, all the airplanes, all the artillery, any units in the area, said, how do we solve this problem right here? And so when you go into a situation like that, I can make an A, B, and C. These are the most likely things that are happening, knowing that none of them will happen. But because I've exhausted all of the ways this could play out, I'm ready for it to play out. And so no different than today, like I was saying, I know something could come of today. I'm going to be ready for everything. I brought my suit jacket. I brought my running shoes. Like, we're ready for whatever's going to happen. And whatever happens, like, you take on. And it's never going to be perfect. You're never going to hit the perfect weather, the perfect storm for you to take action. You just have to be prepared to move forward. And that's kind of how I approach things, especially now, because I'm going into the areas of business and life that I've never even dreamed of before.
So talk to me, too, about, you know, we left our last conversation and I said, what should you never ask special forces and or a person that has been in combat? And we talked about it. And there's some things that, you know, I knew this part just because being around, and you had said, and I'm going to let everyone know so they don't stick their foot in their mouth when they get around a special force, is body count. That's not a thing that you talk about. But what is the, like, the example of it is my pop. I love that dude so much. I would ask him, I would be like, Pop, did you used to fight when you were a kid? And he would be like, he would kind of laugh it off. And then I said, well, what happened? Tell me the specifics. And he was like, well, it wasn't much of a story because I was chopping wood and hauling hay while most of these kids were watching TV and hanging out with their friends. So, like, by the time we got into the fight, it wasn't much of a fight. What are some of the situations that you see that people freak out on in normal day that because you've been in special forces and you've been in combat, you've been in the situation that you're like, I got this one. Like for me, sometimes I freak out because there's not Thin Mints at the Girl Scout table for me to be able to buy.
Why would you have a Girl Scout table without Thin Mints?
That's the real question. So all of you out there only buy Thin Mints. But are there times where you go through it and you're like, are you, I mean, you're an empathetic guy, but I want you to be judgmental if you can for a little bit of time.
Well, I think people stress a lot about whatever the current situation is, you know, and it doesn't matter what it is, you know, if something's not going exactly how you think it should go, or you have this expectation of how something's going to play out and it doesn't, that causes a lot of people stress. And I don't stress very easily because I'm just like, okay, this isn't how we thought it was going to go. Let's roll with this. I will tell you the one thing that causes me stress, like uncontrollably, is being late. I hate being late.
Really?
Yeah. It's something, and I love my wife, and she always, like, has her own time clock. And so, like, if I'm 5 minutes later than I wanted to leave, like, you can see me tense up. But outside of that, I don't stress much.
Why is time such a big one for you?
I think it's just because if I tell you I'm going to be somewhere, it is important that I am there when I tell you I'm going to be there, even if it's little. Like if I'm going over to your house for dinner and I say I'm going to be there at 6:30, we show up at 6:37, those 7 minutes will be very stressful for me.
So you could go to war and you could protect our country at the highest level, but showing up late to dinner.
Everyone's got something. Okay. I'm telling you what mine is. Like, that's the one thing that'll make me
What's
stress.
The worst dessert that a person can have when you go over to their house for dinner?
Oh, you're not going to. I have a sweet tooth.
You'll eat anything?
I'm like a fat kid at heart.
Okay.
That's why I do triathlon, because that's the one time I can eat candy and Pop-Tarts, and it's, like, justified.
Is there any dessert, though, that's like, like, I don't like coconut.
I love coconut.
You do?
Yeah.
I like fresh coconut.
Okay.
I don't like processed coconut, like Mounds or Almond Joy.
Love Almond Joy.
You do?
I do.
We can't be friends anymore,
that's
man.
That's fine.
That is the one. That is like a grandfather, which my father-in-law loves them. I think he likes Almond Joy. But that is a candy bar that I think that God made so kids would find it, eat it, and then be like, I'll never eat candy again.
No, I was all about it.
Candy corn?
Especially in, I like candy corn.
Yeah. You're the only person on earth that likes candy corn.
I told you I have a sweet tooth. You're not going to find much. I can't even think of one that I don't like or that I would be like, oh, what is this?
They're nothing. What about a dish that you're like, just don't make me that?
The only food I really don't like is Brussels sprouts.
What?
Even if you chop them up and like make them with bacon, and it's because you've got those traumatic memories, right? So my mother used to take the canned Brussels sprouts.
There's canned Brussels sprouts?
Yes, and then microwave them. And then I would have to sit at the table and wait until I finished the Brussels sprouts. But I'm a stubborn person, as I told you. So I would just wait her out, knowing she had to go to the bathroom at some point. That's when the Brussels sprouts would disappear. But to this day, I still don't like Brussels sprouts. And my wife will try to hide them in, like, salads or say we should have them with bacon and balsamic. And I just, it's a principle at this point. No, I don't want Brussels sprouts in my house.
So Brussels sprouts, any type of sugar?
Yeah.
Anything?
Yeah.
Anything else you would need?
No, not.
What would you love for the person to be able to make?
I love Italian food.
What's the weirdest food that you dig?
The weirdest food that I dig? I don't know. It's.
You ever had tater dogs?
No, never had tater dogs.
Tater dogs are a mama original.
I'll tell you the weirdest thing I've eaten.
You still haven't asked me what tater dogs are. I think that's insensitive.
That's fair. It's rude. I thought okay. This was about me. Like, this is your show talking about me. Let me pause. What are tater dogs,
Kevin? Oh, it's funny that you ask. You take hot dogs, slice them in half, fry them, okay? Get a little crisp on them. You make mashed potatoes. But in the mashed potatoes, what you do is you take at least the whole bucket of sour cream that goes into the mashed potatoes. Then you do the salt and the butter and the whole nine, and you make them like gangster potatoes. Then you take the fried, cut in half hot dogs, put them in a casserole dish on the bottom.
Okay.
Put the, I'm pouring.
I see it. I see the pour.
So you're pouring, because they got a nice consistency. They're not lumpy. The mashed potatoes over the top of it. Then you put cheddar cheese in strips on the top of that, put it in the oven to bake until the cheese just melts just a little bit. And then you cut it in squares, scoop it onto the plate, tater dogs.
See, my wife won't let us have hot dogs, so this is refreshing. Like, she would, that's good.
Why?
She says they're nasty. There's some days I'm like, hey, hot dog sounds fantastic right now.
Okay, does she eat anything that could be questionable?
She's really healthy, and she cooks such great food for our house, which is always healthy and fresh.
Okay.
But there's no hot dogs.
And there's no Brussels sprouts.
No Brussels sprouts.
But she tries to hide them?
She tries.
Have you ever had deep fried ones?
No, it's principle. Like, I won't have Brussels sprouts.
I'm the same way with olives, though. I am with olives that way. We just came off of 3 days of number one networking conference in the world, Secret Knock. You were apprehensive before you went. Talk to me about the apprehension and talk to me about the experience.
You know, I was apprehensive because it's advertised as this very flashy, you know, networking event with, you know, lots of dancers and show. And I'm not a flashy person. Like, I want to sit down and
have some Brussels sprouts yeah.
And beer and sugar and, like, you know, get to know you.
Yeah.
And that's not really the place where I find comfort. And so I was nervous about going into that kind of environment. You know, but I stopped and I said, you know what? I have 5 days away with my wife in San Diego. Like, we're going to enjoy that and we're going to make some great friends. And we did. We made some incredible friends, like people I hope to be friends with for a long time. And it was just I shifted my focus. It wasn't about where we were going, but the amount of time that I had to spend with my wife and meeting people, which we don't get to do often. So it's great.
What was some of the highlights? What were some of the highlights that you took away from the event?
You had said something that I loved so much, because the day prior, I found myself really frustrated because I get competitive. And so I met somebody. I just launched a podcast called Now What. I met somebody, and I was like, oh, we should have you on the podcast. Like, I'd love, you know, to talk to you some more about this. And he asked me, he said, well, what do you do? And I said, well, you know, I just started this podcast. I've been speaking. It's been, you know, cool. And he's like, well, you're not ready. And he said, you should go to this networking event, meet people, and kind of get your foot in. Instead, I'm not going to do your podcast. And I was frustrated because I realized that if I would have changed that subject and said, you know, I was an executive, I left, I started my own business, now I'm getting ready to run these two hedge funds, that would have opened up the conversation more. And it really frustrated me. We went to dinner that night. I said, I'm going to show this dude. Like, I'm going to prove him wrong because I had that fire. Like, I had those blinders on at dinner with my wife, which we, like, skipped all the night events to have a date night. But I'm so focused on this, like, I'm going to beat you, right? And then the next morning, you get up on stage, and you're like, you should not ask this question. I hate this question. What do you do? And you went on about it. And I loved it. I was like, how did he know? This is exactly what I was thinking about.
Well, how much does it block, though, right? How much does that block where a lot, like I have this, and I love to see people squirm, though. I love it because they just don't know. Like, I think, and it's not a bad thing, it's not a judgment, but I think a lot of times people want to know what you do. And me and my brother were talking about this because as men, women that are listening, thank you so much for listening, and make your man Brussels sprouts as much as possible. But as a man, we're constantly sizing up other men, whether it be financially, whether it be physically, whether it be, you know, in our businesses. We're constantly thinking, one question comes to mind. Can I take you? Can I take you financially? Can I take you physically? Can I take you, you know, all these areas. And it's amazing because that question so much people will posture, but it's just because they don't know what to say. And I love to steer clear of it. For the first 2 years that I hung out with Greg and people would ask me, I would just say I make people happy. And then I would move on and I would ask them about themselves. And they would be so confused, almost frustrated by the end of the time. Like, no, what is it that you do? I was like, I make people happy. And then they would laugh and I would be like, see, I did my job, right? How different would it be, do you think, that if you were able to focus on getting to know someone before you ever needed them?
That should be the focus. So one of the things that made me so happy is we went to this event the night before everything kicked off. It was like a little mastermind.
Yeah.
And there was another couple there, and they were kind of across the room. I'd never talked to them before, but they were kind of just pushing out this energy that I was like, you're people I want to be friends with. So I turned to my wife and I said, hey, I want to be friends with them. No reason at all. And so I went up, like, we introduced ourselves the next day. I said, hey, look, I want to make sure that I'm friends with you and your husband before we leave this thing. Like, that's my goal today. And they were like, cool, let's go to dinner. And that was it. Like, we just connected, went to dinner, just the four of us, got to know each other, you know, exchanged numbers. And now we're going to be friends for life. I told them, I was like, hey, we're friends for life now. And I still couldn't tell you what they do for work. And that's okay with me because I wanted to just make real connections and not network. And that's what frustrated me so much about this question of what do you do? Because if I frame it to you as I was an executive, like I'm managing hedge fund, I own real estate, some people are going to listen to me more, which I hate it. Versus like, hi, I'm Justin. Like, what's your name? Do you have kids? Like, where are you from? How far do you drive to get here? Like, I want to know you and I want to be friends with you. We'll figure out the business stuff if it matters.
How much does that play into also the patience? You know, because I think that so many times when someone networks, they want to do a deal tomorrow. You know, they want to see what you do or they want to see that part and they want to, like, literally, let's do a deal tomorrow. For me, I love the due diligence process through the friendship because then you get to observe somebody. You get to see them, you know. You get to see how they interact with their wife or the way that they interact with their kids. And then you get to make that decision. But I think that so many times it's rushed. Do you feel the same?
Yeah, and honestly, I can see that because I was on the opposite spectrum of this. Like, I was that person who created the perfect resume, who knocked down the titles, who had everything that you look for, you know, when you're saying, okay, what do you do? Like, oh, I'm CEO of a $24 million company. Easy, like, that's an easy answer in a business circle. I was very good at knocking down all of those pillars that are on this, like, checklist of American life. When I stepped away from this and realized I was not on a great path for me, like as growing as a man and like who I wanted to become for my family, that's when I started to get frustrated really with the past me and say, okay, how do we fix this? How do we re-engage? And it's changing that focus of business growth into, you know, friendship growth and relationship building, and the other things will come when they're supposed to.
Can you have both? Because there are so many people that are like, you can either have the, you know, you can have that relationship. Let's you could have a relationship with God, or you could have your business. And that's what a lot of times people want you to choose either. Or. I don't believe that, but what's your take on it?
No, I don't believe that either. And I did a podcast yesterday with
Justin Freistadt,
who, you know, we've become friends over the past couple months, and we were talking about how, you know, your relationship with your wife, you know, becomes that center of what you're doing, and then there's no ceiling, and it's no different than your relationship with God. So you have God and your wife as center of what you're doing. There's no ceiling to what you're going to do. But if you just be focused on your business, there's going to be a stopping point where you run out of engine, like you run out of fuel, because that's not an infinite supply. Your love with those other two is forever.
So how can a person enhance their relationship with God when you can't see him? Like you can't see him. He's not like sitting. My pops told me before he passed, I remember walking into the room and seeing him, and I hadn't seen him in that state before as far as physically. And I broke down and I got close to him, and he could barely even talk, but he said, "I'll always be with you, son." Now, I know my pop is with me even right now. I got a jacket in here, but I don't have him here. How do you create and enhance a relationship with God when he's a person that's not here?
You know, I'm no expert on this, so I can only tell you how I do it. And for me, it's starting my day with that relationship first. You know, whether that's getting into the book, getting into my journal, listening to somebody reading Proverbs on YouTube, like these are all things that I do to constantly, you know, strengthen that relationship. And I make sure that it's centered, because even if I don't know where I'm going, I know he does. And I just have to put that faith and trust out.
How does it apply, though? Like, how does it apply in business? When you, because a lot of times people, when you say, I'm going to have faith and we're going to walk in faith and things like that, then a lot of people think it's, you're pushing off responsibility. You're not taking responsibility. How can you merge the two? Because you seem to have hit, in no way do I expect you to be perfect. I don't think that you're perfect, and I would never project that on you. But I see you adding faith to the things that you're doing. And I see you relying on faith, where conventionally, it probably sometimes the world would say, you're making a bad decision, but you're acting on faith, and you know that it's the right decision. How do you know that, and how do you continue on in it?
I don't know. My viewpoint is pretty simple, is that like God was not lackadaisical in the creation of you and me. So why would I be lackadaisical in how I take on life? You know, and so I find when people say, I'm going to put it up to faith, they stop. They're like, I'm going to put this up to faith. Like, Jesus, take the wheel. Like, that doesn't mean take your hands off the wheel. Like, you still have to drive, but you're going to trust in the movements that he's going to give you. You know, so for me, I'm still driving, and I'm going to drive like as fast and hard as I can, but I'm going to put trust into where we're going, because I don't know that.
I never have read in the word that where it says run or be in a rush for things. I always hear the opposite. How do you calm yourself when we're in a world that constantly says you need to speed up with social, you need to speed up with, I mean, even coming into the podcast space, you need to speed up, you need to do all these things. How do you slow down?
You have to find time to silence the noise. And there's a lot of ways to do it. Like I like meditation. I like even biking and running help me, or swimming, because it gets me to a mental place where it's calm. But if you're not pushing yourself physically, like you can do this. Just stop and listen to your breath and really focus in and listen instead of taking in all the noise that we normally do on the day. And I have to do this constantly because we have so much going on in the world. How do I know where to go? I just stop and really silence all that noise and listen.
How much is enough?
Of what? I think for me, I don't know where things are going in life. And I've accepted that as a truth. And this is where that whole Jesus takes the wheel destination part is really out of my hands. And so I don't have a stopping point of what is enough. It's just, I'm going to keep going in the direction that I'm getting pushed to. As doors open, as things get shown to me, we're going to run through them. Mm. That's it.
I want to thank you, Ben, because I sat you down with no setup. That's what I like. And people always ask me too. They're like, "Oh well, do you send out questions?" No, I don't. I won't. I won't send out questions to people because I want to ask them a question that they'll actually answer. And most of the time, I'm not going to ask them a question that I'm going to ask all the time. I just want to, because it causes me to be present in that situation, right? And so I want to honor you in this. And number one, sitting down and allowing me to do this. I think it's really, really cool. What message you want to send out to Drea?
I love you so much. Thank you for always standing by me and understanding my level of crazy. Like you've supported me in things that most people would just write off and think were absolutely nuts. But you said, all right, you better just put the work in. And you've always been there as my rock. And I can't tell you that enough.
I know you've given advice to them before. I started the podcast because two kids, Maddox and McKenna, 12 years old, 15 years old. McKenna just got she just did her tryout for Purple Rain. So if you're in Carlsbad, support local theater. Support local theater. Support local theater. If you're anywhere, support local theater. The arts, it means so much to me because she just ran to the car. She's so excited. She's like, oh my gosh, I hit the notes. I don't know what the notes are, but she was like, I hit the notes. They asked me if I play piano. I was like, do you want to play? She said, I think I might. She hasn't listened to her dad for a long time saying play the piano, but she listened to this person. I made it because I didn't want those kids to worship idols. I just wanted them to be inspired by icons. What advice does Uncle Justin have for Maddox and McKenna today?
Just be yourself. You don't have to be anybody else in the world. God made you exactly how you should be. Just be you.
Justin, you're incredible, man. Never outworked. If you haven't got the book, check out the book. He talks about punching his mom in the face. It is a true story. Honestly, like, we should highlight that part. I think it was awesome. And I think you're a worse person for it. And it helped me to realize that as much as you will ever do in your life, that I get to keep you humble because I'll just be like, well, I didn't do that.
Feed your kids Brussels sprouts.
I'm serious, though. The book is amazing. It's a national bestseller now. Author, podcaster, now speaker. You're an incredible man. But honestly, like what I told the people at Secret Knock, don't let the smooth taste fool you. This guy is not just starting off on the journey. He put in the work. He laid the groundwork. And he has run companies at the highest level. But most of all, he's just Justin, which I think is amazing, man. I appreciate you. Excellent. And you're officially off the hot seat.